$0 co-op commissions are here. We're going to talk about it today. Stay tuned. This episode of Keeping It Real is brought to you by Real Geeks. How many homes are you going to sell this year? Do you have the right tools? Is your website turning soft leads into interested buyers? Are you spending money on leads that aren't converting? Well, Real Geeks is your solution. Find out why agents across the country choose Real Geeks as their technology partner. Real Geeks was created by an agent for agents. They pride themselves on delivering a sales and marketing solution so that you can easily generate more business. Their agent websites are fast and built for lead conversion with a smooth search experience for your visitors. Real Geeks also includes an easy-to-use agent CRM. So once a lead signs up on your website, you can track their interest and have great follow-up conversations. Real Geeks is loaded with a ton of marketing tools to nurture your leads and increase brand awareness. Visit realgeeks.com/keepingitrealpod and find out why realtors come to Real Geeks to generate more business. Again, visit realgeeks.com/keepingitrealpod. And now, onto our show. This episode of Keeping It Real is brought to you by Apply Design. Welcome to a revolution in real estate presentation brought to you by Apply Design, the leading virtual staging solution tailored for forward-thinking realtors. Now, in today's fast-paced market, making a lasting impression is everything. With Apply Design, you unlock the full potential of every listing, transforming empty spaces into stunning, buyer-attracting homes, all with just a few clicks and in just a few minutes. Choose their DIY staging, available for as low as $7 per image, or save time with their auto staging feature for as low as $10.50 per image. Plus, experience their service firsthand with a trial image absolutely free. Their intuitive platform empowers you to bring visions to life, ensuring your listings stand out, captivate, and sell. And for listeners of Keeping It Real, Apply Design is offering an exclusive 15% off your first purchase. Simply use the code REAL24, that's REAL24, at checkout. Elevate your listings, enchant your clients, and achieve faster sales with Apply Design. Don't let your properties blend in. Make them shine with Apply Design. Your success story starts now. Visit them at applydesign.io. Again, that's applydesign.io. Remember, your first impression is the only impression. And now, onto the show. Welcome to Keeping It Real, the largest podcast made by real estate agents and for real estate agents. My name is DJ Paris. I'm your guide and host through the show. Today is our monthly series called Unpopular Real Estate Opinions with Chris Linsell. Now, Chris Linsell is a real estate technology analyst and the director of content at large. He's also the director of content at with Luxury Presence, and he specializes in new solutions to old questions, constantly exploring the cutting edge of technology in the real estate space. Chris has also many years of experience as a licensed realtor in the state of Michigan, has worked as a marketer, a digital strategist, and a trainer for major national brands like Berkshire Hathaway Home Services of Michigan and Coldwell Banker Schmidt Realtors. Chris, again, is the director of content with Luxury Presence. Chris is also often chosen to speak at conferences and events. He has been a featured speaker for the last several years at the National Association of Realtors, along with other more regional conferences as well. So he's an accomplished musician, actor, and speaker. Chris has engaged with audience sizes ranging from 30 to 3,000. Chris, welcome to the show once again.
DJ, great to see you. Happy, I guess it's almost spring in the Midwest. I don't know. It feels like we're getting there, but good to see you either way.
Yeah, well, I know today in Chicago, it's in the 60s, 65 currently. So we are very, very fortunate. This has been, I imagine, in Michigan, you are having similar experiences. And we are very lucky. This winter has been very lucky for us.
Yeah, definitely. But, you know, regardless of the weather is doing, it's a hot time to talk about real estate, no matter what's going on outside.
So I'll tell you the thing that Chris and I were talking about today, and we both agreed this would be a fun topic to really dive into because it seems to be on the minds of so many agents, including the agents here at our firm, agents Chris interacts with, as well as just probably all of our listeners, which is, you know, last year, National Association of Realtors changed their policy related to co-op commissions. And so there is a lot of fear right now where will agents representing buyers be sort of left in the cold? You know, how will they get paid going forward? And so we're going to explore this entire topic of what the National Association of Realtors, what they've changed in their rules, and how you can still participate and hopefully not have it negatively impact your business. So let's maybe we should start at the beginning, sort of like how we got here, because I know you have a lot of sort of thoughts and information mm-hmm. on, you know, why did this? So I think the change came about in October of last year, where National Association of Realtors said we can, you know, listing agents can now offer a $0 co-op commission to the buyer's agent, which is technically the seller's agent, but I call it the buyer's agent because it's too confusing for me to think of a buyer as a seller. So mm-hmm. anyway, we'll just say listing agent and buyer's agent. But now buyer's agents can see MLS listings that have a zero mm-hmm. there. And that is very scary, of course, to a lot of agents. So let's talk about how we got here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, there is a like a Shakespearean level of drama we could get into here, but that's not really going to do anybody any good. So here are some basics here. And I'm going to try and outline the, you know, how we got here with as little emotion as possible, because it's really easy to slip into, you know, kind of passionate, you know, commentaries over whether or not it should or shouldn't have been one way or the other. But separating the should or shouldn't, here are the facts. For a long time, real estate operated in a manner that was considered, the word was cooperative, meaning whenever a property was listed for sale, the agent and more generally the broker that was managing that listing agreed on a commission rate with the seller of that property that was a fee for services. I'm going to sell your house. I'm going to get X percentage of the sale price as my fee for it. And where the word cooperation comes in is it was, excuse me, understood across our industry that, you know, it takes two people to tango. You've got to have a buyer and a seller. And as such, you typically have a buyer's agent and a seller's agent. And so that commission that was negotiated with the seller of the property, that gets split between both agents. This is cooperation. And there has always been kind of some rumbling around whether or not this system makes sense, because ultimately the buyer's agent is getting compensated based on a contract that exists not between them and another person. They're getting compensated based on a contract that exists between the listing agent and the seller of the property. And this kind of incongruency led to a lot of questions. And this isn't something that just started happening. These are questions that have existed for a long time as to whether or not the buyer's representative, the buyer's agent, is being compensated appropriately, because the compensation that they get isn't necessarily tied to any agreement that they make or any work that they do. It's tied ultimately to the number that's on the listing contract that the seller and the seller's agent sign. And
so by and large, yeah, the buyer's agent is, for lack of a better word, at the mercy of the agreement that the seller and the listing agent has made, not only for the listing agent's commission, but of course for the buyer's agent commission. And there wasn't really an easy way for the buyer's agent to negotiate his or her fee, because it was there on the MLS as dictated by the listing agent and the seller. Mm-hmm. And so this would sort of create an issue of how is the buyer's agent actually being compensated? Meaning, are they being compensated for the work they did with their buyer? And the answer is kind of not really. That's technically what's happening, but it really has nothing to do with what the buyer's agent is doing for their client. It's really just what the seller and the listing agent determined the buyer's agent's going to get paid.
Well, I think that some of that is right, but I'd push back, Yanya, a little bit there, because technically speaking, the buyer's agent doesn't get let's just set the table really quickly. We're talking about real estate 12 months ago here, before the lawsuits and the kerfluffle really kind of escalated. A buyer's agent was being compensated based on a single proof point. Does the transaction close? The buyer's agent doesn't get paid unless the transaction closes. So this and the buyer's agent's compensation rate is not something that they determine. It is something that is determined by a contract signed between the listing agent and the seller of the property. You could certainly say that the buyer's agent isn't in control of their own compensation, but I would argue that they are ultimately in control of whether or not the transaction closes, or at least they are a part of a cooperative cohort whose job it is to make sure the transaction closes. So to that degree, buyer's agents, they have like a binary, like I get paid or I don't get paid, but they don't have control necessarily over how much they get paid. And this is where the lawsuits really kind of got some teeth, was that there were lawsuits that were brought by consumers against major brokerages that said, that essentially alleged that buyer's agents were getting paid an incongruent amount of money based on the work that they were doing. Or more specifically, that the work that they were doing and the quality of that work was not tied to the amount of compensation that they were getting. So that there was an obligation to pay fees disconnected to the amount and quality of work being done.
Right.
So that's where we find ourselves. Oh, actually, and then I guess the second to last step here is the lawsuits were the National Association of Realtors and these major brokerage firms were found to be the plaintiffs were successful here. The finding was that this was a form of price fixing is the wrong word here, but essentially that there was collusion and an inappropriate disconnection between the amount of work being done and the amount of compensation being provided. And so that's where we find ourselves now with further graduated conversations, including the Department of Justice, who has now proposed changes to how real estates and brokers get compensated, essentially decoupling commissions, making it so a buyer's agent must be independently compensated for the individual work that they are doing, separate from the seller's agent. And this is kind of a big deal.
Huge deal.
Yeah.
And in the past, and please correct me mm-hmm. if I'm wrong, because I have heard that this may not be accurate, but the reason it was set up that the seller's agent really ultimately cuts the check for the entirety of the dual commissions, because it then provided a benefit to the home buyer, in particular the first time home buyer, who then does not have to come up with an additional X amount to pay specifically his or her broker. So what I understand is that the sellers, of course, pay that entire amount. That's an arguable thing as well, because we could argue that while they're technically paying it, you could argue that it's built into the price, but we won't have that particular conversation. But technically, they're cutting the check, the sellers. And the idea, of course, being that that this would benefit the buyer who doesn't have to pay or come out of pocket for, you know, thousands, maybe tens of thousands of dollars mm-hmm. for their commission to their broker, to their realtor rather. And then what they would sort of pay it back when they are in the process of selling their property. And this would just allow people to be able to afford homes much more easily. And it just, it's really, that's how I understand it.
Right.
Let me know if that's
no, right. No, I think your understanding is accurate, but I do want to point out that the source of the information that you just quoted is the National Association of Realtors. So, I mean, I'll be fully transparent here. I am a supporter of the National Association of Realtors as a general body. I'm not a supporter of all the decisions that they make. I'm not a supporter of some of their stances on certain policies. But the it's made up of a lot of really hardworking people. Generally speaking, I'm in support of this body as an advocacy group for our industry. That being said, the background that you just provided is, I mean, legitimately straight from the messaging playbook of the National Association of Realtors. And there is some logic, there is some truth to this too, that the commission structure is designed so that the, you know, the fingers and toes of the buyers don't really get stepped on too much in terms of commissions and fees. But let's like call a spade here. The price of the buyer's commission comes out of the proceeds of the sale. The proceeds of the sale are a product of the price being paid. That's being paid by the buyer. And
right.
More so, like, not to put fuel on the fire here, but for most of us, that price being paid is in the form of a mortgage. And so you are paying interest for 30 years on that buyer's aid, even so on that commission. So even though you don't actually stroke a check to your agent if you're buying a home, let's say you're buying a $500,000 house and the buyer's agent commission was 3%. So that's $15,000 with an interest rate over 30 years. You have paid via these different vehicles. I mean, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $47,000-$49,000 at the end of your mortgage payment. That's
and without seeing that accrue over time. Those are not showing up on mortgage statements. But Chris is technically right. So basically, what now we're having the conversation of who's really paying the commission, the buyer's agent commission, and that's technically it's the seller, but in reality, it's all built into the system mm-hmm. to where in most cases it's going to be, you know, the buyer's side is going to, it's baked into the price.
Yeah.
So buyers are typically, if they're using, you know, a lending for that purchase, then Chris is right. They're technically paying that over time.
But you know, all that to say, frankly, this is just, that's that argument right there isn't even really an argument. I'm not really interested in getting into who is ultimately responsible because this just kind of becomes a semantic conversation.
Yeah, it almost does.
Where matter. I'm really interested though is what the downstream effects could be if the DOJ, you know, the Department of Justice currently has a proposal that aims to make the practice of cooperative compensation illegal. Like this isn't just something that would be a regulation within the National Association of Realtors. This would be a law, a federal law, which this is a serious shift that would make compensation of the buyer's agent a required independent practice. And to your point earlier, there are certainly advocacy groups, including the National Association of Realtors, who have said that making such a change would be devastating to, especially to buyers who are relatively cash poor. They qualify for a loan, but they don't have enough cash to front all of the expenses that go into this. I mean, I think that there is a... there is a relative, like this is a legitimate conversation to have. There, it's not, I'm not saying that there aren't solutions to this puzzle, but the fact remains, if the amount of cash at closing for buyers increased by $12,000, and I get $12,000 because the typical home price in the United States is right around $400,000. The typical buy side commission is right around 3%. 3% times 400,000 is 12 grand. If the typical buy side commission is $12,000, and that's something that a buyer is expected to bring a check for at closing, I guarantee you there are incredible swaths of home buyers that are going to find themselves unable to make a purchase without making other arrangements. And that in itself is something that we should be thoughtful about. How do we solve for that?
Yeah, a couple of things. One, I think most pressing for agents today is, since buyers do not yet, it's not a widespread practice where buyers are paying their agent directly for the services rendered, typically still going through the co-op commission as dictated by seller and listing agent. But I'm curious, if I'm a buyer's agent, because now we can see MLS listings that may have a zero in that co-op in the co-op field. Mm-hmm. So if I'm a buyer's agent and I have a fiduciary responsibility to find the best to put my client in a home that suits their financial interests, and I am not being compensated because the best property for their needs has a zero in the co-op compensation field, I would be like, what do I do? Mm-hmm. I know ethically I am still to show this home because this I'm a fiduciary and I want to, you know, be as you know, a successful agent to my client. However, I also want to get paid. Mm-hmm. So what would you suggest? So technically this could be happening right now.
Yeah.
And in fact, it probably is. You know, what should agents on the buy side really think about when they see a zero in that co-op compensation field?
Well, so there's two things that I would say. The first thing is, if agents aren't thinking about this until they see the zero, then they're kind of up the creek, frankly.
Can I tell you one of my favorite quotes? Just please, to interrupt, is the worst time to learn how to fight. Do you know the answer to this?
No, tell me.
While you're in a fight. So what Chris said is exactly what I said, is don't wait until this actually is in front, yeah, of you and you're scrambling to figure it
100%,
out. 100%.
100%. I love that. I'm gonna use that today. The worst time to learn how to fight.
It's a good one.
While you're in a fight. So to that point. The very first thing, in fact, while you're listening to this podcast, you should be going on your local MLS site, going to your brokerage, going to the National Association of Realtors, go to my old friends over at theclose.com, because I wrote an article there all about it, and you should be looking up buyer broker agreements right now. I guarantee you, just the conversation around this particular issue right now is going to prompt a rise in the use of buyer broker agreements. And if you're not familiar with buyer broker agreements, it is essentially a contract that buyers sign with an agent. And originally, this contract, the purpose of this contract was to establish exclusivity, like to keep buyers from maintaining active relationships with three different realtors. And, you know, it was just kind of the Hunger Games to see who brought the right listing to them. The new wave of buyer brokers is going to be include a guaranteed minimum compensation. It's just that this is the reality of it. And my expectation here is that buyer brokers are going to continue to have language about exclusivity, but that there is also going to be a clause in there that says payment for my services has a minimum threshold. Maybe it's 2%. If the commission rate, if the established cooperative commission is less than 2%, it's the responsibility of the buyer to meet that threshold. And it's going to lead to some awkward conversations, because there are going to be times in the next 6 months where you look at listings and you're going to see zero, or maybe it's a flat commission. Maybe it's like $1,000 or $500. And you're going to have to go to your client and say, listen, I'm happy to show this to you. I'm happy to continue to work with you in the purchase of this property. If this is a property that closes, here is going to be your responsibility in terms of commissions. And so this is the other thing. The first thing that agents need to be doing is looking at that buyer-broker agreement. The second thing they need to be doing is making a game plan for the following conversation. There's going to be a time where you say, okay, we can definitely go look at this, but the compensation on here is $1,000, and this is a $500,000 home. And so if this is a property that closes at $500,000, you'll be responsible for the remaining $14,000 in commission. And they're going to turn around and say, well, I don't want to do that. I'm going to go work with another agent. And then you have to say, listen, we have a buyer broker agreement that signs exclusive representation for whatever that time period is. It's going to cause some discomfort. So what you need to be doing as an agent right now is preparing for these conversations, but also you need to be lining up the pitch for your value proposition as to why you are worth that amount of money. And frankly, if you can't demonstrate exactly why you are worth that level of compensation, if you cannot outline for people that you are more than just access to the MLS and somebody who can punch in lockbox codes, this is an indication that maybe, just maybe, you are making too much money right now. If you can't demonstrate your value, if you cannot adequately put together a couple of slides, literally or physically or figuratively, about the value that you bring to your client's transactions, then you may be charging too much and they may have a legitimate argument. But this is a chance for you to differentiate, because there's going to be a whole bunch of your competitors who won't be able to do that. There's going to be a whole bunch of competitors out there who won't be able to adequately say why they're worth $15,000 per transaction. The people who can say that are going to win. They're going to get all of the buyers. So to that end, frankly, this kind of becomes an opportunity for people who can differentiate themselves and adequately express the value of their services. If you can be a good storyteller on this, this may be an opportunity for you to capture more commissions, not less.
So I have a few questions here. Yeah. So I'm seeing a situation where agents will see that zero who are representing buyers. Mm-hmm. They'll see the zero on a particular listing. They'll go, I don't want to have that conversation. I'm just not going to even let my buyer know about this listing, mm-hmm. because then I don't have to have the conversation and I can just look for other properties that already have a co-op commission built in. Mm-hmm. What is the risk to an agent who does that practice? Because technically you are violating, I would assume you potentially violating the ethics agreements that we make with National Association mm-hmm. of Realtors. So curious on do you think there's going to be some lawsuits down the pipe when buyers realize, hey, I don't think my agent showed me some of these properties that I now go back and see were available at that time. He or she didn't make me aware of these, and they all seem to have a zero co-op commission. I'm curious if they, you know, anyway, I'm just, you know, when somebody sees this, do we have to show our client the property?
Yeah.
When they see the zero,
it's 100% against the code of ethics. So excuse me, to that end, the minimum that you're going to run into here are serious problems with your professional organizations. Most local realtor associations belong to And when I say most, I mean like 99% local realtors associations belong to their state level realtor associations. And every state level realtor association belongs to the National Association of Realtors. If you want to maintain status within those professional trade groups, you have to adhere to the code of ethics. And in the code of ethics, it says that you cannot make a decision on whether or not to show or not show a property based on the commission. The specific language, if I'm remembering correctly, is that as an identified fiduciary for our clients, we are obligated to show, I'm going to mess this up. So anyone who's reading along with me, show me a little grace here. But it is, we are a fiduciary for our clients. We are obligated to provide them with the most up-to-date information on any property that is live and uncontracted on the market. So if somebody wants to see a house and it is not under contract, if you refuse to do so based on the commission rate, you are in violation of those specific clauses within the code of ethics. There is no legal precedent to suggest that this is against a certain law. There is, however, I think, a winding garden path. God, I'm going to get in trouble for saying this. Maybe I shouldn't be live streaming this on Instagram. There is a winding garden path to suggest that refusal to show somebody a property based on the commission rate could have fair housing implications. And the reason being that if you refuse to show somebody a property based on the compensation rate, the understanding here is that you are not showing the property because you're not going to get paid what you want. And there is an implication there that could be, well, I'm not going to get paid what I want because this person can't pay me what I want. And once you become a decision maker based on your client's abilities to do or not do things, then you get into this kind of murky water of whether or not those things are actually within their control. And there is, I mean, there have been much lighter lawsuits brought around money that start to connect to things like race, gender, familial status. I mean, admittedly, it is a windy path that is not a straight line, and there are plenty of doors that would need to open in between there. But frankly, the idea that somebody, that an agent would not show a property just because of the commission rate opens them up. I mean, there's just going to be so many plaintiff's attorneys who are going to be researching day and night looking for ways to turn that into a lawsuit. It just seems like a terrible idea to me.
Yeah, and it's really easy to sort of figure out. You can make a pretty strong case just by looking at MLS listings for, you know, somebody who feels that they didn't get to see all the properties available to them. Now, do we think there may be anyone coming to the rescue of the buyer's agent? For example, do we think mortgage lenders could possibly build commissions into their pricing? I don't know if that's even legal or if that violates any other guidelines or laws, mm-hmm. but do we think there could be some additional solutions beyond just, hey, Mr. or Mrs. Buyer, you're going to cut me a check if the commission rate that they're offering is less than what I demand?
I think that's a possibility. Actually, you know what? I do want to address that, but I did think of one other thing on the last topic I just want to mention. The other way that a realtor could get in trouble with a buyer by refusing to show them a property is if they are if they have signed a contract somewhere along the lines with that buyer that has said, you know, that I agree to be your fiduciary. And we're talking about buyer brokers earlier. The buyer broker language could get you there. If you sign a contract with somebody where they commit to a certain amount of exclusive representation and then you refuse to adequately represent them, that could be breach of contract, that you could be sued for that. So just want to make sure that that point gets made. To your earlier point, or to your latter point, 100%. When was the last time that we ever found that a bank couldn't figure out how to charge us for a new widget to add on to a loan? In fact, this is music to a bank's ears, frankly. If I'm sitting over at Rocket Mortgage right now, in the ideas room, which I imagine to be like the big vault, for, you know, Scrooge McDuck's vault with a table in the middle. All the money is around them. They're sitting at the table coming up with the ideas. The idea I'm thinking of right now is an add-on product to mortgages that says, yes, a mortgage has to be we have to make a loan for a mortgage that is based on real property. Which means, you know, a mortgage loan can't cover the dining room table, and it can't cover the artwork in the, and it can't cover services that cannot be considered real property. But man, wouldn't it be great if we had a partner product that says, if you have a mortgage through Rocket Mortgage, you qualify for a partner loan to cover the commission. It's not a part of your 30-year mortgage. It's a 5-year loan. It's got its own interest rate. This is another service that banks could offer. Frankly, this isn't a terrible idea because this does provide a solution to the buyers who are cash light. But the problem here is that buyers who utilize such a program are now take on two financial obligations instead of one. They have independent loan obligations. Like, what happens if they default on the commission loan? Does that mean that their property is in jeopardy? There's a whole bunch of kind of tangled thorns tied to that. And then additionally, in order for that sort of program to make sense, you would think that the price of property would need to come down, factoring in that we are no longer considering the buyer's commission as a part of the sale price. That I don't think is going to happen, which is going to really ruffle some folks' feathers. This idea that if we are going to put $0 in or 0% in the buyer's commission area on the MLS, but when we price the property, we are not going to factor in the zero buyer commission percentage when we're looking at comparables. Like, you find a comparable property with half a dozen comparable sales. If you're doing this correctly, if you're not charging a buyer's commission, you should find your comparables, run your CMA, and then reduce it by 2.5% or 3%. I don't think that's
It's going to make CMAs really tricky. Because you are going to have to look at the co-op field on every single property. And like you said, make that adjustment if it's a zero in the co-op field. And I'm sure MLS or CMA companies that you may be using will eventually have a way to solve for this where you won't have to sort of manually do it. But obviously, you're right that comps are going to be screwy for the near from now until whenever this if this gets adjusted or changed, you're going to have to think about, you know, pricing. And then the other thing, I'm curious, if I'm a buyer and my agent says, hey, just so you know, this is one of those zero co-op commission properties, so I'm going to have to charge you X, you know, and that's part of our agreement. But if 8 out of 10 of the properties my buyer's agent showing me have a co-op commission and then 2 don't, my first question is, wait, what? Why do 2 not have them and 8 do? That to me is also a separate conversation in addition. And what's the benefit to the listing agent for not offering a co-op commission? Why does someone do that? I would want to know as the buyer, what's going on here? Like, why isn't this all universal?
Well, to that end, the biggest conversation that's going to be had right now in this environment is not going to happen between, you know, pundits like us. It's not going to even be happening between professionals or leaders within trade organizations. It's going to be happening around kitchen tables with buyers and sellers as agents try and decode the news for their clients. Because ultimately, I mean, you bring up a great point. Like, if I am a seller of a property and I have a particular window from like within that I want to sell my home, like I need to sell my home in the next 3 months. Shouldn't be too hard in a relatively competitive market right now. Even with mortgage rates, you know, north of where most people are comfortable, there's still in most markets, we're still experiencing enough of an inventory crunch that most listings are going to be able to sell in 3 months. But with the additional kind of wrinkle of whether or not offering a buyer's commission will affect the saleability of the home and the average days on market, this becomes a whole new level of strategy that listing agents have to advise their clients on. And buyers agents, now they don't have, I mean, they've never had to talk to their clients, certainly about getting paid in the first place, but secondly, about how you approach strategy for looking for a property, knowing that there are some properties that will have commissions and some that won't, and how will that affect your offer strategy? You can certainly see a world in which the offer strategy for a property with a buyer's comp versus one without could be very different, because you can discern a lot out of that.
And if I'm a seller, I would want to ask my listing agent, I'd rather not offer a co-op commission. Let's see if somebody can come to the table with their own buyer's agent and they can work out their own commission structure. Let's see if we can do that first and save me 2.5%. And then maybe if we don't get any action, okay, maybe one, you know, and that's just a hypothetical, but I would assume as sellers become more aware of this ruling, this change, what's the incentive for the seller? Yes, we could say, well, more eyeballs will be on it if you offer a co-op commission, because it technically incentivizes the agent on the buy side to show it to their client because they're going to get paid. However, we just talked about, you know, that shouldn't be a deterrent from a buyer's agent showing a property anyway. So it gets really, really tricky. But as a seller, if I don't need to sell it in the next few months, mm-hmm. if I just want to see if I maybe get an offer, why would I not just offer zero on the co-op field just to see if any buyers are able to either purchase it directly without an agent, right? Or with an agent who has some sort of buyer agreement that they're going to compensate their agent directly. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering as the seller, boy, now I have an opportunity to possibly save half of the commission I was going to pay anyway. Mm-hmm. Do we see this as a possibility for the future?
I definitely think it's a possibility. I think it will, you know, with any kind of structural shift in any kind of business, there is going to be mess. It's going to be complicated and frustrating at first. And I guarantee that the first crop of reputable listings from reputable agents that show up on Zillow with a 0% buyer's agent fee in the other financial information category on Zillow, this is going to cause a fair amount of hoopla, because there are going to be, what's going to happen here is there's going to be, you know, this kind of natural kind of headbutting different parties. Well, and ultimately what's going to the attitude that's going to come about is sellers are going to say, listen, it's not my job to compensate your agent. That's what the lawsuit said. It's your job to compensate your agent. If you want to see this house, that's what the price is. That's what has to happen. And then buyers are going to say, well, wait a minute. Your home is priced as if you are compensating a buyer's agent. So if you want this to happen, then I'm going to write you a full price offer, but I'm going to ask for a $15,000 concession so that I can cut a check to my seller or to my agent. Like, there is going to be, this isn't just going to be an agent fight. This
is and now we're back at the original. You're right. It's going to create adversarial relationships between the agents, because the agents, the buyer's agent is likely to call the seller's agent and say, hey, I know you have a zero here. Any wiggle room there? Mm-hmm. Can we adjust that? Mm-hmm. Can we figure this out? Because my buyer, he's ready. He or she wants to do this, but they don't have the extra money. So let's work this out. And to your point, we're now just going back to the original sort of plan, which is, oh, maybe they can give me a credit at closing or reduce the price, which is exactly sort of what's happening currently mm-hmm. anyway, just without it being said out loud. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be a very tangled. So if I'm a buyer's agent, let's just maybe wrap up with some action steps. Mm-hmm. So number one, as Chris said, and I agree, and I have heard this. Chris was nice enough to call me a pundit. He is actually a pundit. I'm just the dope who is sort of keeping the show rolling. But Chris is really a lot more knowledgeable. But I will tell you that I went to an event. We're lucky in Chicago to have, well, depending on what your opinion of National Association of Realtors is, lucky or unlucky to have them here locally. But what's nice about it is we get access to some of their people. So I actually was in an event recently where they spoke, and they said the number one thing to protect yourself, as Chris said, as couple commissions are being decoupled, is to have a buyer agreement. This just protects you. But remember, it's not just as simple as getting a signature. You are going to have a conversation, a very deep and detailed conversation with that buyer to say, hey, here's what may happen, and here's what we will try to do. And there may be steps involved. For example, hey, Mr. or Mrs. Buyer, if we go to a listing that has a 0%, I am going to try to get the seller or the listing agent to cut me into their commission. I'll try that first. That may not work. It looks like it probably won't. So then we have to go to you, and maybe the mortgage company will have a way for you to pay it, or maybe you'll have to pay it directly. But regardless, this is just a messy situation in general, because there aren't any real clear-cut guidelines for what to do when. But getting that buyer agency agreement is absolutely step one, and you should have it anyway. You should have it anyway, just to protect yourself in the event that maybe that person is working with two agents that you don't know they're working with another agent. And if you've worked in this industry long enough, that's probably happened to you once. So get an exclusive buyer's agreement. And then, as Chris said, formulate your plan of attack for being able to have this conversation with every buyer before you start looking at properties. And you're right, it is going to be a messy conversation mm-hmm. because it's not going to make a lot of sense to the buyer. Buyers and sellers typically, in my experience, don't really understand how commissions are paid. Mm-hmm. Agents do, buyers and sellers don't. So this is going to be a real education process for the buyer's agent to have that conversation, to make sure that the buyer understands what's happening, why it's happening, and how they can and may need to compensate the buyer's agent.
Can I give you, as we're closing, one thing that I would really love to see happen out of this? I would love to see an alternative to all of this mess develop. And it is, subscription. The idea is subscription-based yeah. real estate services. Mm-hmm. And the short version of this, and anybody who's listening to this, steal this idea and build this company, because I want it to be a thing, and I don't want to build it, and I want somebody else to build it so I can subscribe to it. Every month, I pay my real estate company for basically like a financial planner or a wealth manager, but just for my house, or as a buyer, for a continued subscription to the access to advice and information. And in exchange, when it's time to buy or sell a home, that purchase or sale happens commission-free. It is not a transactional relationship. It is a recurring revenue relationship. And then all of this stuff doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is the relationship that you have with your clients. And you are incentivized to maintain good relationships, so you maintain this monthly recurring revenue. It's not a transactional relationship any longer.
And to give this idea some context, the financial advisory, well, what used to be known as stockbrokers, went through this shift in the late 90s. So just to give everyone some context, prior to what we now call financial advisors, people who were stockbrokers, meaning they were transactional. They would sell a stock, they would get a commission on every trade. Then as technology developed, there were companies that came out that were doing subscription-based models where you would pay X amount per month and get unlimited trades. And now I think trades are essentially free at most institutions anyway. So how are financial advisors getting paid? Well, as Chris said, they are a subscription service, most of them, not all of them. Some of them do have flat fee services, which is really neat. That's a new addition to the financial advisory role. But the vast majority of financial advisors are getting paid as a percentage of assets under management. Mm-hmm. Very similar to what Chris is saying. So, hey, I have $1 million in my retirement accounts. I want Mr. or Mrs. Financial Advisor to manage that, and I'm going to pay them 1% of that amount a year, $10,000 in this case, which seems like a lot. However, it really makes sense. It fits a little bit more clearly into the financial advisory world, because a financial advisor's job is to protect those assets under management and hopefully help them grow to the level of risk that the client is able to endure. So there's an incentive for the agent not only to continue to receive that 1% per year, but also to grow their asset base, because they will receive more. Mm-hmm. So it will be very interesting to see if there is a subscription model similar to that can be established for real estate agents, where you're right, maybe you're getting a percentage of the home value, perhaps you're just getting a flat fee every year. And yes, when it's time to buy and sell, hey, I'm your person. But then it also begs the question, what happens if that agent leaves the industry and the person's been paying, you know, I guess maybe they get transferred to another agent. Maybe there becomes more salaried buyer agents positions that are coming. Maybe the commission ultimately will, commission sort of structure that is currently a place will only survive to the listing agent. You know, it really nobody knows at this point. So it is a moving target that hasn't stopped moving yet.
But
it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
And, you know, just in closing, disruption is the ground on which innovation is built. Anybody who is scared about this, just remember, when everybody is back on their heels, the people who can get on their toes the fastest win. So spend a little bit of time, take a few deep breaths, feel nervous about it, and then get on your toes, because the faster that happens, the faster you win.
Well, and just to let everyone know, the financial advisor metaphor, or the example I was using, this was very much opposed by stockbrokers who were used to getting massive commissions on big trades. So they would get, you know, huge commissions, and now they're going from maybe a 10% commission on a trade to a 1% commission for assets under management. But over time, if you build your business that way, then fee-based is known as fee-based versus transaction-based, then you actually ultimately end up building yourself a nice little annuity where you're getting paid every year from your client by managing. So I think it'll be interesting to see if there's a real estate firm that can figure out what value can we provide in between purchase and sale to want pay us a certain amount per year, and you know, see if that model is sustainable. It seems like it should be, because it's worked in other industries. In fact, it's working a lot in the real estate brokerage industry. We've seen the advent. Our company is one. There's lots of them now that are transaction-based companies, or rather fee-based companies, that don't take splits and they just take a flat fee on every sale, give the agent the rest of the commission. So that's kind of a subscription model as well. So that's actually been happening. I think that's going to be more popular. Mm-hmm. I think we will start to see salaried buyer agents. I think that's going to be probably some of the easiest ways to sort of solve for that. But we're not sure. Nobody knows. So we'll wait and see. But get that buyer agreement, agency agreement signed, exclusive buyer agency agreement signed, protect yourself, and make sure that you're having those conversations, because there will come a day where your client wants to see something and you're like, oh no, there's no compensation for me from the list agent. Chris, let's plug some of your stuff that's coming up. Tell us, what do you have coming up? Do you have any speaking engagements?
Yeah, if you are in Southwest Florida, I will be at Southwest Florida Tech Con in Fort Myers the last week of March, March 25th, 6th, and 7th. I will be at the Minneapolis Association of Realtors annual conference, April 10th, 11th, and 12th. So if you're in Southwest Florida, or if you're in Minneapolis, I'd love to see you live and in living color. Come talk with me. Come tell me why I'm wrong. Would love to hear your opinion on things. And then there's a whole bunch of stuff happening later this year, including a trip down to Inman, the new conference that's happening in Miami in the middle of May, and then a few other things later this year. So if you want to see me live, come to Florida, come to Minneapolis, come to Miami Beach. That would be a lot of fun. And if you want to see me virtually, I really encourage you to come check out Luxury Presence. This is a company that I am a part of, the director of content there. Got some amazing things happening there. You know, I'm not here to plug our products and services, but I can genuinely say, you know, I spent a lot of time in the real estate tech space. I've really honestly never been more excited to be a part of a team that's building tools for the next generation of realtors like I am with this team. And they really got the goods here. It's pretty exciting.
Well said. Well, please everyone visit to learn all things Chris. ChrisLinsell.com is the place to go. You can also follow him on social media. You can argue with him on Twitter or LinkedIn or Facebook or Instagram, anywhere. He's all over the place. And please check him out. And if you're looking for a speaker for your brokerage, for your team, for your local association, state association, or any national association members who might be listening, Chris is a wonderful speaker and he is sought after. And he's certainly somebody that has lots of opinions and a lot of predictions that end up coming true. So he is somebody to consider for any speaking engagements. On behalf of the audience, Chris, thank you. This was a deep dive. I appreciate that. We'll probably have a lot more to talk about as new developments happen within these conversations, and very excited to continue to provide that to our audience. You know what I would really like too from our audience? Let us know what questions you have about this topic. Mm-hmm. I would be very curious to sort of better understand what our agents, you know, worried about, where are their concerns, so that we can address those in a future episode. So feel free to shoot those over to us. Also, tell a friend about the show, please. As per usual, everyone really should get a chance to listen to this episode to hear Chris's opinions on sort of best practices around the sort of new developments with buyer compensation. So shoot this over to them. And also please check out our sponsors. They keep the ship afloat, and services and products are really useful to your business. Chris, on behalf of everyone, thank you. On behalf of Chris and myself, thank you to everyone who's made it to the end of this episode. We appreciate you. We will see everybody on the next episode. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, guys.